read and hear more about important news, events, and public policy debates at ncnewsline.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. A new report from national experts at the Network for Public Education paints a sobering picture of the policy choices North Carolina state legislators have made for our public schools in recent years. The report is called The Best and the Worst State Houses for Supporting Public Schools and Their Students. And sadly, it gives North Carolina an F grade, lumping us in with a small group of five underachievers at the very bottom of the 50 states. Of course, the tragedy of this is that it doesn't have to be this way. The state has all the resources it needs to adequately fund and support our public schools and take them to the top of the national rankings. Unfortunately, as I was reminded in a recent conversation I had with Chris Nordstrom, a senior policy analyst with the North Carolina Justice Center's Education and Law Project, such an approach would be at odds with the strategy being pursued by Republican legislative leaders to starve traditional public schools and shift taxpayer funding to unaccountable charter and voucher schools.
Well, Chris Nordstrom, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Good to be back. Thanks for having me.
You recently authored an op-ed for NC Newsline about a new report from a national organization, the Network for Public Education. It's entitled The Best and the Worst State Houses for Supporting Public Schools and Their Students. And distressingly, but perhaps not surprisingly, North Carolina's ranked near the bottom, one of 17 states earning an F grade. And what are some of the key findings and your concerns about it?
Yeah, so, the report looks at how states support their public schools, their traditional public schools that have democratic oversight, and, which states are trying to really undermine our democratically governed, traditional, inclusive public schools. And, like you said, they put North Carolina right towards the bottom of the list. We rank there in the bottom five, get an F grade. That probably is not too surprising. I'm sure a lot of your listeners know that there has been really a coordinated assault on public schools in recent years, led by the state legislature that continues to underfund our public schools and to try to limit the professionalism of teachers and how they go about doing their jobs and leaving schools underfunded, understaffed. And instead of investing, supporting the system that has worked for us, so well over the past century, it's really the only place that, when done correctly, our public schools are the one institution that really fosters cross-racial, cross-class solidarity. Instead, they're abandoning that system in place of a system of vouchers and charter schools that really create winners and losers.
Why do you think they've chosen the term democratically governed? I mean, obviously, there are lots of individuals and groups that are involved in governing our schools. Obviously, the legislature plays a big role, but we have a Department of Public Instruction, we have local school boards, state board of education. I gather by using that term, we're trying to make a point. I wonder if you've thought at all about why they're using that phrase.
Well, I think that's one of the challenges of our public school system, but also I think one of the great benefits is they are centers for democracy, that they are governed by local boards. And I know sometimes those local boards seem like they might be difficult to access, and it's a real battle. But that battle is, I think, important because we want our public schools to reflect the values and goals of our community. And having that democratic discussion and debate ultimately, I believe, strengthens our public schools and strengthens our commitment to, the shared public benefits of public schools. I think they really choose that term in contrast to draw a contrast between charter schools, which are part of the public school system in that you receive public school money, but they're governed by private boards that do not offer that same level of accountability, that same level of access that our traditional inclusive public schools provide.
Got it. That makes perfect sense. So there are several examples. You've sort of quickly ticked off some of them that are in the report that evidence this sort of waning commitment to democratically governed public schools. You talk about charter schools, but just there's this general movement of the so-called school choice movement is really maybe even the spearhead for this whole effort that's really bringing about this dramatic change in our public education system, right?
Yeah. And I think, there was a dramatic expansion of North Carolina's voucher program this past legislative session that provides a good case study into the anti-democratic maneuverings that are required to undermine our public schools and expand school privatization. In other states where things like vouchers have been on the ballot, so looking at states like Georgia, Texas even, voters have rejected these plans. Mm-hmm. They realize that plans that take money out of our public school system and put that public subsidy into the pockets of wealthy families that are already have their children enrolled in private schools, providing public subsidy of the private school industry, a private school industry that is often just extremely discriminatory, doesn't reflect the values of most voters. So what North Carolina did, knowing that this is not a very popular program, to all of a sudden open public subsidy to millionaires and billionaires that have their children enrolled in private school, they, you know, didn't run it as a standalone bill. It wasn't on the ballot. They put it into the omnibus budget bill, an omnibus budget bill that was also tied to the expansion of Medicaid. And so that gave legislators, it gave the governor a difficult choice. Yeah. They could either reject this bill and deny health care to about 600,000 North Carolinians, or they could accept the bill, expand health care to hundreds of thousands of North Carolinians, yet also, you know, foster, you know, the continued undermining of our traditional public schools.
We're talking with Chris Nordstrom, who's a senior policy analyst with the North Carolina Justice Center's Education and Law Project. We're talking about the subject of really the ongoing assault on our public schools in North Carolina. I didn't mention this before we went on the air, but it's piqued my interest and thoughts. There's the phenomenon our reporter Greg Childress has been reporting on lately, where school that was a charter school but wasn't working out for them to be a public charter school, or literally converting to be private voucher schools. I wonder if that's a phenomenon you expect to continue to grow as, with the vast expansion of vouchers. Maybe the whole purpose for many people even starting charter schools may sort of be going away. I wonder if that's a phenomenon to be on the lookout for.
Yeah, I think that's something to keep an eye on. Certainly the bar to consider yourself a private school is very low in North Carolina. Yeah. Essentially, all you have to do is get the fire marshal to sign off on your building and submit a few pieces of paperwork. But beyond that, it's very easy to become a private school. Our private school voucher program, our public subsidy of private schools, is the most unregulated in the country. So I think you will see now, especially that the vouchers themselves, the value of that voucher has gone up substantially, almost doubling for the maximum voucher amount. You could see charter schools convert, especially ones that have been closed down due to poor performance, because there are no performance standards on the voucher schools.
Right.
But I think, you know, the bigger issue to look out for homeschools, where homeschools will consider themselves, you know, convert to private schools in order to start reaping, you know, $7,000 per student.
And they may only have a handful of students. They can still call themselves a private school, right?
Yep. There's no limit to the, you know, you can have one student and call yourself a private school.
Oh, that's amazing. Where might this lead, Chris? I know you hope it won't go there, but what are your concerns about what this really means for the future of public education in North Carolina?
My concern is we don't have to imagine necessarily. You can look at countries like Chile that went all in on voucher programs, that saw, you know, the net result of that was really a bifurcated system where the wealthy families were able to isolate themselves in exclusive private schools, and the traditional public schools were really a bastion of, you know, they were the sort of the last result. They were underfunded, and the only families that went there were, you know, the families that had low incomes, the families that couldn't afford to go to the better resourced schools. And I think that is sort of the ultimate design here. I guess that it's actually irrelevant whether or not that's their intention or not, because that is going to be the ultimate result if we continue on this path of privatization of our public schools.
And despite all this and lousy funding that's as a function of our state's economy, probably the lowest in the country, our public schools still continue to work miracles and still continue to draw lots of strong support from average North Carolinians. They're still very popular, right?
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, getting back to the report, I think that's sort of one of the main points, is that, you know, parents especially are generally satisfied with their traditional public schools. And, you know, they are generally turned off by these attacks on our public schools. And the only reason these attacks are successful is due to the anti-democratic measures that the moneyed interests are taking in order to implement these unpopular moves. So, you know, when you look at the Moms for Liberty that are jumping all over these intentionally manufactured moral panics. You know, Christopher Rufo from the Manhattan Institute, he will say, I'm going to make up this issue, you know, whether that's CRT was the initial thing.
Critical race.
And then they moved on to the anti-trans stuff, and now it's DEI. You know, they go from issue to issue to issue, intentionally designed to undermine schools. But when the people that embrace those manufactured moral panics have run for office, they've generally been rejected by voters. You know, I think generally this agenda of privatization, of demonization, you know, most folks who actually have exposure to the public school system realize that, you know, the things they're complaining about are made up issues. The vast majority of our educators want to do the most for our students, want to do, you know, have the students' best interests in mind. You know, the problem is, though, we have a legislature that won't invest and give those educators the tools necessary to provide the supports that all students need and deserve.
So you don't have any doubt if we could ever have a vote of the people that most North Carolinians would vote for better funding for public schools and probably to move away from the privatization scheme.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the latest vote on the proper funding of our public schools is at the Supreme Court. You know, a couple weeks ago, they had the hearing regarding the long-running 30-year Leandro court case. And that is just another example. It's not included in the report we talked about, but it is another example of anti-democratic measures where folks want our public schools to be well-funded. Our Constitution calls for it. But rather than fulfilling that constitutional obligation, legislative leaders are spending all sorts of money to fight that constitutional requirement in court, getting their own sons elected to the Supreme Court, not having them recuse themselves. So referring there, of course, to Senator Berger, whose son serves on the Supreme Court and did not recuse himself from the Leandro case, even though his dad is sort of a defendant in the case. Yeah. There are lots of undemocratic measures that they're taking in order to facilitate the continued privatization and undermining of our traditional public schools.
And we're coming to the end of our time with Chris Nordstrom from the North Carolina Justice Center's Education Law Project. I guess along those lines, one last question, I guess, about Leandro. So we're waiting to hear what the Supreme Court's going to do. Basically, as it stands, North Carolina school children have had, theoretically anyway, a constitution, not even theoretically, really a constitutional right to a sound basic education for almost three decades. But because the legislature's never funded what it would take to provide that, it's sort of a hollow right. And it's really come down to whether the Supreme Court will make the legislature abide by the constitution or just decide that there's nothing they can do and the legislature just follow its own counsel on that. I guess, is that really where we're at?
I mean, you know, court cases can be very confusing. You know, lawyers like to talk a lot about technicalities, but I think in the end, this case is pretty simple, that our Constitution provides students the right to decent schools and the legislature doesn't want to provide it. So they're looking at excuses. You know, they can talk about standing and jurisdiction and all of these terms, but ultimately, you know, our Constitution says that students deserve public schools. We have a plan to provide it. We have the money to fund the plan. And the legislatures just don't want to fund that plan. You know, that's really what it comes down to at the end of the day. And unfortunately, what it means is kind of scary, is that ultimately it's, you know, that the legislature can ignore the parts of the Constitution that they don't agree with. And I think that's sort of a scary notion. It really undermines rights, not just for students, you know, the 1.5 million public school students, but it really means that all of our rights that are enshrined in the state constitution aren't worth much if they decide incorrectly on this.
Hope springs eternal, I suppose, and we'll be watching very closely. Chris Nordstrom is a senior policy analyst with the North Carolina Justice Center's Education and Law Project. By listening to him, you can hear why our state is incredibly lucky to have him watching and commenting and writing and researching about our public education system and doing what he can to help preserve it and hopefully move it forward. Chris, thanks so much for your great work and commentary. And we'll continue to read you here at NC Newsline and at the ncjustice.org website as well. So keep up the good work. We'll talk again real soon.
Thanks so much. Always good to see you. Always good to chat.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe for free to some of our state's best news coverage and political commentary at ncnewsline.com. can also listen to all of our interviews and commentaries wherever you get your podcasts. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views, a weekly look at state news, events, and public policy debates produced by North Carolina Newsline. Visit them online at ncnewsline.com.